That means you and I weren't together in that past life, Bean. Maybe you were the shark.
That's very aggressive. I think you're triggering me.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Alyssa Grushka.
And today we're talking about the concept of triggers. Bean, are you ready?
Yeah, I feel triggered already.
Hi, Bean.
Hi, how are you?
Happy August.
Happy August. My goodness already. Gracious.
What in the heck?
I don't like it. I will tell you, when your kids are not in camp, sure makes the summer go by fast.
Go fast or slow?
It's like a weird combo. It's like, yeah. I don't know what we did with our days, but like they were gone, but they also felt like they were 4 days in one day.
Right. Well, Bean, it is our birthday month.
What an exciting month for us, Virgos. Right? And Leos. Leos in the top half. Top half.
Happy birthday, Leos. Happy birthday, Virgos. Birds. End of August, Virgos. Who should be Leos, but we're Virgos.
What an exciting month.
I know. We're going to do a little episode around our birthday. I think we're going to talk about aging because that's where we're at in our lives. But that's not what's happening today. What's going on? How's your week been?
That actually leads me is a perfect transition straight into my cringe, which is my current state of hormones. And hormones are a bitch. I don't care if you're 25. I don't care if you're 45. Hormones are a bitch. And I'm at this weird age where I'm like, am I pregnant or is this perimenopause? And I feel it all the time. I'm taking pregnancy tests and I'm also going to see somebody to see if I'm in perimenopause. It's like,
I
can't win.
That is a weird stage.
It's a weird stage. Like, is my body stopping the baby making or is my body ramping up because it's the end of my baby making? And it's like, get it out. You know what I mean? Jelly bean.
What would happen? What if you like knew you were pregnant right now? What level of excitement would exist in you?
I think it would be a lot of feelings. It would be all the feels.
This is complicated, I think. After you've had a few kids and you're in your 40s, your whole relationship to, I think at least, I mean, let's not speak for everyone, but for me, like your whole relationship to the concept of being pregnant changes dramatically.
I also think that if this was a few years ago, it might be different, but like my kids are older now, you know what I mean? Totally. And like we're in that phase where no one's napping and we can travel easier and like,
no diapers.
I don't have to watch them. I can run to the store and leave like my oldest one with the younger ones for a few. Like we've like entered next level parenting. So I think it would be challenging. I suspect it's all just older age hormones, honestly, but like, why is it giving me acne? Like, can't you reserve that
I've
for
heard
my younger
that happens.
Hormones? Like, what the hell?
I know. It's so rude. It's like we already been through that once.
Seriously.
And now
I look at my daughter who has teenage hormones, which are honestly maybe the most insane of all hormones out there.
They are pretty insane.
They are wild. And sometimes I look at her skin. I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Even though her skin is mostly beautiful, but she'll have breakouts. But now I'm looking at my own skin and I'm like, what the hell? And that's another thing. I think her hormones are messing with my hormones.
I told you she's alphaing you.
Wait, why does she alpha me?
You didn't like that.
Yeah, but why does she alpha me?
Because her hormones are stronger.
No.
Because they're coming out raging right now. And she is, you know, women sync up. She is driving the show in the house right now.
Wow.
You better get in line.
Like, her hormones are like, if we're going to have acne, you're going to have acne. And I'm like, what? I don't want acne. I already had acne. Thanks a lot.
Get out of here, teenage hormones.
Acne? Please stop alphaing me. I'm good, man. I've dealt with my fair share.
I feel so bad because sometimes I'll have like a pimple and I'll be like, oh my God, this pimple. And Raina will look at me and be like, Mom,
I feel like she has
good
skin. Doesn't she have
She does have good skin, but she's 15. She has some acne. Yeah, totally. Wow, I'm sorry that the acne is contagious in your house. That's intense. That's cringe. That's your real cringe moment.
It's super, and it's also super cringe that it's like, am I pregnant or am I menopausal? It's a fun time in life. What?
All right. Happy birthday, month. My cringe has to do with how paralyzing my phobia of sharks has become.
Oh, Bean, I thought you were going to get the band.
It was too expensive. Didn't we talk about this? Yeah, it didn't make sense.
But tell the listeners, I've never heard of it. It's quite an interesting find.
Didn't I talk about it already?
No, I think you told my kids about it.
Oh, that's Zoom true. You you're right. It. Yes. Okay, so I don't know. I'm sure I've mentioned I have a massive shark phobia. Like, and obviously when I say this, people laugh because I am a grown woman, not a six-year-old child. But also, obviously sharks are scary. So people are like, well, duh. But no, no, no. With me, it is a like physiological. Yes, exactly. It is a physiological response that amounts to tightness in my chest and like deep anxiety. So obviously it's the summer. The kids have been in the beach, in the water. And if I don't take a moment to center myself, I am like staring at them with such vigilance and terror that I'm afraid. I know. And I'm afraid it's contagious, you know, like the fear. Like I don't want to scare them. Yeah.
Yes. Like they do pick up on your fear. Yes. They
right. And then like, fear. I don't want to scare them of the ocean and I want to have everyone have a good time. And anyway, I'm really cringed out by this because I assumed that as I got older, I would get better. And as I'm getting older, my shark fear is getting a lot worse. So there, I found this thing before we went off to the Outer Banks called shark bands. And they're basically surfers here in California wear them a lot. It's this like wristband you wear around your wrist that emits a radio frequency that messes with the shark's frequency. So it like, it is a little sad. And also I did have a little like, I don't want to mess with the ocean like that. Like that doesn't feel right to go in there and like what about the dolphins and the ones that aren't trying to kill us? You know?
They're just hopping around. Yeah.
So we didn't get the shark bands, but I watched a whole video on it. Like I became obsessed with shark bands for a week and there was they had a dummy in there that was baited and a hammerhead like came close and then was like, nope. And turned around and swam away because of the frequency it was emitting. So I don't know, guys. Anyone, if anyone buys a shark bands, let us know.
Let us know. Why don't you do like EMDR around your shark phobia?
I think I am going to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I am.
Because I need that to. For you. Yeah.
I don't like it either. It's really terrifying.
I don't want that for you. When I know. You said your chest got tight, I got sad.
Yeah. Or like I'll be in the water. I try to only go in the water if it is crystal clear and I can see my toes. But sometimes your whole family's in the water. What?
Or you're on the Jersey Shore. I mean, that like only exists in certain places.
That's what I mean. Like in the Caribbean, I will go in the water easily.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, you're with your family. You don't want to be like the one sitting out being a lame. So I'll go in and I'll be totally fine. I'll be having fun. And then the thought will just creep into my head and my entire body will like freeze.
Really I wonder messed if you were eaten by a shark in your last life.
100% in my past life, that, I was eaten by a shark. I don't know, but I am telling you, that is the only explanation.
That's bizarre. Or maybe and also scared the shit out of you when you were little and you forget about it.
Well, I did grow up in the Jaws generation, which didn't help. So that means that like I was watching Jaws when I was 4.
Oh, girl, join the club. Yeah. Among many others.
But there's so many 80s kids that don't have this same paralysis.
Yeah, but they have things that you happen to get that one.
I will say that when I meet other people who have a shark terror, I decide that they were also with me in that past life and that all of us died in that way. So that's how tragic. I know I've met a past life friend.
Oh, that's really sad. I'm sad for you.
I know. That means you and I weren't together in that past life. Bean.
No.
Maybe you were the shark.
I have no fear of sharks whatsoever.
Maybe Sorry. You were the shark that killed me.
That's very aggressive. I think Sorry. You're triggering me. Anyway, that really is a great transition into why we're doing this episode.
Let's
is that
do it.
People use that word like recklessly almost now when it is a serious issue. Like how
recklessly,
I just recklessly.
That's a strong accusation. Well,
okay, give me a better word.
I actually love that it's reflecting how you really feel. I want you to tell us more.
Not recklessly, nonchalantly, like I just did when I was like, am I triggering you for your sharks? But triggers are real things. Like, I don't know why I did that weird voice. Like,
I love
why
it.
I got whiny.
His name is Lewis.
Lewis?
Right?
But do you get it now?
Yeah.
Or Gerald.
Okay. Sorry, so, any Lewises. Please don't stop listening to us.
Anyway, so whiny whiny guy, Gerald. It's not fair for people who are really struggling. I'm going to actually explain what it is first before, great, even though I think tell most people know what a trigger is, but I think they think of it as more simple because even when I was trying to think of examples of my own triggers, I could only think of things that weren't really triggers because it's so overused in that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yes. Hold on.
What does it mean exactly?
I will pull it up. A trigger is a stimulus that elicits a reaction in the context of mental illness, which is a big space for these triggers, so it should be taken seriously, is often used to mean something that brings on or worsens symptoms. This often happens to people with a history of trauma or who are recovering from mental illness, self-harm, addiction, and/or eating disorders. There's all kinds of triggers. There's external triggers, which is like sounds and sights and smells and things like that, which I think is a pretty common one. There's internal ones, which is just like strong feelings that come up inside based on past experiences. One example I read that really explains this is making a doctor's appointment after some sort of negative medical experience or like diagnosis, right, how you can feel like paralyzed inside, yeah, about making another appointment because you are scared.
Right.
Trauma triggers, also, I think, pretty well known based on past trauma. A good one and that people know about, too, is the sound of fireworks for causing issues for veterans who have been, yes, in war.
Yeah.
And then symptom triggers, which I didn't really think about. A physical change can trigger a larger mental health issue. The example there was like a lack of sleep can really impact somebody with bipolar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So those were my big things. And also, interestingly enough, mental health professionals don't know yet precisely how triggers form. So there's like all different kinds. Some researchers believe that the brain stores memories from a traumatic event differently than memories of a non-traumatic event.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. So that when you are triggered, it goes back to that part of your brain and it's the, yeah, only way you can operate.
Yeah. Well, in somatics, which is the study of the body, the mind, body, spirit connection, the idea is that the tissues in your body hold your trauma.
Right.
So if you face a traumatic event as a child or, and again, in my work, I define traumatic event as anything that created harm to your system.
Right.
Right. So that is neglect. That is, you know, verbal,
yes,
physical abuse, obviously, but also just not receiving the kind of love and care that you needed or understanding as a child.
Right.
But that your body in that moment, you know, in the tissues around your heart, for example, learn to contract to protect that part of you. And so it's a practice that your tissues have got into to create protection, that contraction practice. And so oftentimes what happens is if you're, something is reminding you of that sadness, your body will remind you. You'll get a tightness in your chest or your shoulders or your back because the tissues in your body are contracting as they have been for decades to protect you.
That's really sad, right? And that just shows how serious.
But brilliant. Sad, but also
brilliant.
The body is brilliant.
Brilliant. But the point being that triggers are very serious, that it is a real thing that we're all just throwing around all the time. But this is like some serious shit, man.
What do you feel like when you hear people say triggered that you are like, oh, you're misusing it or you're making light of it?
I was trying to think about while we were leading up to this episode.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm really triggered when I hold the door for people and they don't acknowledge it. And then I was like, that's not a fucking trigger. That just makes me mad. It's not a trigger though.
Yeah. I think what we're hearing today in like the common language is I'm triggered is synonymous for I'm annoyed.
Right.
I'm frustrated. You've made me uncomfortable.
Correct. But it's not truly relating back to some past experience or some physical sensation. It's just like I'm triggered. Right. It's overused.
I'm gonna argue that it does relate to a past experience or a belief system though. Like, okay, agree that especially with the way you just defined it and set it up for us around it being connected to something deeply traumatic, mental health, mental illness, that it is being overused and therefore diluted for sure. But I do think that if you're saying I'm triggered because I opened the door, held the door open and I didn't get a thank you, it is connect, like it wouldn't bother you unless it was connected to an experience from the past or a belief system, not feeling seen, not feeling that there was gratitude for you at some point. It wouldn't bother you unless it triggered something deeper. I believe that to the ends of the earth.
I don't know how I feel about that, because I just kind of like, it's very, that's a very situational thing. I'm kind of like, it's not, it doesn't feel deeper to me. It just feels like this wasn't my job to hold the door for you. So just acknowledge it. I just did it to be kind.
Other people might not feel the same depth of frustration as you do.
100%.
About opening the door.
100%. Right?
Which means it's attached to something that is creating a deeper frustration. Yeah, like I always say in my work, you don't have a visceral reaction to something unless it has a deep root within you.
Interesting. I definitely have a visceral reaction to it.
Yeah.
Like, and I know what you're saying now about me, but I still don't know how it lands with
me. So I will say, I actually like the idea of the word trigger being overused doesn't bother me so much, because it makes me feel like we are more and more aware of our own mental health, of our own internal struggles. Like we are naming at least an experience that's happening in our inner system externally. We're finding a way to name it. Whereas that was not common 30, 40 years ago, where something is happening in your internal world and you just suck it up, or you think you're not normal. You know, you think you've got to be perfect and happy all the time. I think that the way that right now we're talking about being triggered and our mental health is at least normalizing, hey, everyone struggles with moments of anxiety, depression, being upset, being uncomfortable, being frustrated. It's not all smiles and perfection, and that's what success is.
Right. I love that, but then just come up with another word.
I think you should do that.
And don't, like you
said, start a movement.
And don't dilute the true meaning of trigger for people who are truly suffering with triggers.
Okay, that's fair. So,
okay. Don't be a jerk.
For the context of this conversation though, I want to get into how people can start to get clear on what is triggering them. Are you comfortable if we use that word broadly for the rest of the conversation?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I agree. And I think it's important, though, that we're also defining and allowing people to understand. I mean, they can use whatever language they want.
All right. Well, look, I want to get it a little bit into how I use triggers in the work of coaching people to heal their limiting beliefs and therefore hear their higher selves. And that is to really become acquainted with the part of you that does react to an external stimulus and get really acquainted with it. Like to be really aware that if I am having lunch with Bean and Bean says,
that'd be so fun.
I don't remember, you know, I'll tell a story and Bean will say, I don't remember that, right? If I am, which happens all the time.
Yeah.
The rest of this story is not true because I don't get upset. But if I'm having a visceral reaction to my best friend telling me she doesn't remember something that I was a part of, that is an invitation to me in the work that I do to say, wait a minute, what's going on with me that has triggered such a deep emotional response to this external stimulus of my best friend saying she doesn't remember this time together?
Right.
And that exploration really helps you to understand where inside yourself is asking for your attention and asking to be healed, right?
Yeah.
So let's just follow this example.
Okay.
If that were true,
let's just clarify again that it's not true.
It's not true. It is not true. I actually find it hilarious. We call you Dory for a reason that you don't remember anything. But if that were true and I were doing that exploration, you know, maybe for me, if I really sat with it and I was like, God, I'm really, really upset every time I feel like Melissa forgets an experience we had together. What is this inside me? Who inside me is this upset?
Right, right.
In my work, what we do together is like go back and find what is the origin moment of this feeling of being upset that someone's forgotten something about me.
How do you do that? How do you get to the origin moment?
I guarantee. When you have a visceral reaction, if I were to ask you, okay, take a minute, take a deep breath, what is the earliest memory of that feeling? You'd be able to tell me.
I want to do this with you with my door exercise later.
Your door.
Off air.
Oh.
My holding the door thing. Because I literally can't even, like, I know where you're thinking based on what you think, but I I couldn't even like begin to get close to what I think would cause that. I just think it's, I don't like when people don't acknowledge when you do something like holding a door.
I think when you're starting to practice this work, it's better to start with something that truly is a visceral reaction, whereas the door thing for you is a light frustration. So it's gonna be harder to find the link. But if you are interested in this exploration, start with something that really does like upset you when it happens, like really feels deeply upsetting. And what happens is if I ask a client or myself, I do this on myself all the time. What's the earliest memory of this like feeling like someone's forgotten you? Instantly, I'm 5 years old. Like instantly, I'm 5 years old sitting on the couch alone because mom had to work and sister was older, like whatever, right? So my point is like if I am having this deep emotional reaction to my best friend who I know loves me,
right,
not remembering something we did together, that is an invitation that there's another part of me, a much younger part of me that is still stuck in a moment of pain that is asking for my attention in that moment.
Yeah.
And that is how I think the work of triggers is so deeply enlightening and transformative, because it's bringing forward a forgotten part of you that is still very much in pain. And by the way, still very much in control of your decisions.
Yeah. And a part of your DNA that needs tending to.
Yeah. Because then if I have the story, well, I don't deserve to be remembered, right? As a child, then I'm going to do things based on that story until I interrupt that story. I'm going to seek validation. I'm going to want to be included. I'm going to take things. Oh, here's a really great example that is true. I think I said this on another episode. I have a really hard time being left out of stuff. Remember? And you were like, I love being left out. I realize that it's because of that five-year-old who's like, no, 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 don't leave me on this couch by myself. 100%. That's what it is. And knowing that allows me to go take care of her rather than blame the people who, well, for whatever reason, didn't include me, which is never nefarious usually.
So let's say, though, I think a huge takeaway from this episode is going to be, one, learning how to deal with your own internal triggers and what's going on with you. But also, we trigger people all day unconsciously, right?
Yeah.
And often unintentionally. I truly believe it.
How
do you know? How do you know if you're triggering somebody? I think we do it all the time. And people get triggered really and then like walk away all triggered and you don't even know you did anything.
Totally. That's such a good question. And listen, I'm going to start with the most important takeaway to that question, which is it's not your responsibility.
Oh, right.
Like other people. Well, let me just give this caveat.
If you don't know, if it's unintentional.
Yes, correct. If you are not intending to create harm.
Right. Okay.
And you do something that triggers someone, that is not your responsibility. True. It is your responsibility to listen to them and be there for them.
Right.
But it is their responsibility, like I said, in the example of the five-year-old sitting on the couch. It's not the responsibility of the friends who didn't invite me to the thing.
Right, right.
That I'm triggered. It's me. Like, in fact, I think part of the reason that we can be such a-holes to each other and judgmental is that we don't take accountability for our own triggers. We want other people to fix the things that are hurting us for us. Right. We want to control their behavior. We want to control the way that they interact. This doesn't mean you don't have boundaries. Right. Let's just hold some complexity here. You have boundaries, but you getting triggered by someone else's behavior who is not purposefully intending harm is not on them. That is an exploration on you. So how do you know you're triggering other people? I mean, first of all, I'll tell you this. We are all intuitive beings. You do know. Like if you slow down and really connect to the other person that you're interacting with, you will notice a shift in their frequency. You'll notice,
what if it's
I said a thing.
I don't want to trigger a stranger either. I guess, though, it's their responsibility, like you said, to do the self-exploration and then to verbalize to somebody, like, this is a trigger for me. Right. Yeah.
Oh, you may have noticed I got really quiet at that dinner the other night. It's because this conversation about travel triggered my sadness that I can't afford it right now. You know what I mean? Like that's on the person that had the experience, not the group of people who weren't aware of it. So I think the biggest takeaway here is let's stop putting our triggers and our needs on other people. We are accountable for being triggered and for going back and finding the aspect of us that is sad, lonely, neglected, harmed, hurt, and having opening a dialogue between us and that self,
right?
And doing that work internally. It is not someone else's responsibility. That said, I think that it's also really important in intimate relationships to discuss your triggers really openly so that at least you're aware with your partner or your best friend or whatever, right, whoever you're spending a lot of time with that you adore, intimate relationships,
right,
that you're aware that this is what this person's operating system is and that you can take their operating system into consideration. I'm not saying enable them, but take it into consideration. So for example, TJ and I are really clear about each other's triggers. And for TJ, it's the concept of it's never enough.
Right.
I'm not enough. It's never enough. Right. Hopefully he's okay with me sharing this publicly. I think he knows already that this happens. But that means that if, for example, he has done something for our business,
right,
like he has gone and done something super detailed, like created an amazing finance spreadsheet.
Right.
And I get in there and I find three or four things that don't make sense.
Right.
Right. Sometimes the immediate response in him is it's never enough. I spent 8 hours on this and it's still not enough. Right?
TJ.
Is it my responsibility that he's seeing it that way? No. But being aware that that's his operating system reminds me to express a ton of gratitude first.
Right.
Like, hey, I can really see by looking at this that you spent a lot of time on this. I really appreciate that. By the way, this part of it doesn't make sense. Can you clarify?
I think a lot of people, especially in marriages in particular, don't want to do that because they're like, it's not my job to tiptoe around or coddle. But I actually think, because I've been attempting to practice this as well, greater perspective for their operating systems gives you tools to better address your own needs and concerns. Like you want to say, like, I still need this done on the finance sheet. So my best way of doing that is by taking into consideration, not to just come at you and say, I still need these four things. You're going to say, this is awesome. This looks great. Can we also do this? Not like, this was, you know, you totally missed this stuff. Because otherwise, I think a lot of, and I could be wrong, but I think a lot of women in particular already feel like they're mothering enough that they don't want to have to like mother in that way. But it's not, if you really reflect, it's not really mothering. It's really being aware of what you're working with.
Absolutely. And being aware of being able to acknowledge in a way the person requires and still state your needs. It's and. You don't have to forego the stating of the needs to acknowledge the way that the person's being triggered.
So when someone comes to you and says, someone in an intimate relationship, but I also have another question after this, and they come to you and they say, this really triggers me when XYZ, or I'm really triggered by, then what? You can't just be like, well, I'm never going to do that again.
Well, I think it's two things. One is just like, I hate this word because this concept is overused, but it is holding space for the conversation.
That's what, like, we were just saying.
And the way that you can do that is listening and being curious. Curiosity. Oh, really? What was it about it that like felt that way? Oh, yeah. What does that feel like? That's so interesting. Like just genuinely holding the space for the person to have that feeling without making it about you.
And if it is an intimate relationship, you should care.
Correct. But what happens is when someone comes to us, especially if they're not being accountable for being triggered, which means they're using language that says, you made me feel insignificant.
Right.
Then that's an accusation.
Right.
What happens is we get defensive because we make it immediately about us. If the person has the emotional intelligence or has listened to this episode and is coming to you and saying, we had that interaction last night and I felt really insignificant, then it's almost easier to be like, why? Where's that coming from? How often does that happen? Like really hold space by asking questions. But if the person is, you made me feel insignificant, you kind of got to take a deep breath and be like, still try and not make it about you. And invite the questions and the internal exploration to turn it around and really make it about them. Because that's what it is. It's about them. So that is the first thing, is just listen.
Even in marriage counseling, they always say use I statements. Don't use you statements.
Exactly.
Because it's immediately you get defensive. The other partner gets defensive when you're blaming them.
Right. I do a lot of conflict resolution, and that is our number one rule.
It is.
You have to say I dot, dot, dot. The second thing is just repair. Like really asking, okay, if I created harm, how can I repair it? What do you need to create repair in this moment? And let them tell you what they need to repair whatever harm was created. Or what do you need me to be mindful of to help you as you're working through this trigger?
Right.
So that's like in that example, or last night I was at a dinner. My friend knows that I hate being left out. And she was talking about this party. And I said, what party? And she immediately said, you were out of town. Remember, I invited you. I was like, oh, no, no, I'm not mad. I just was trying to. But I was like, wow, she really knows.
What party?
Yeah, I didn't even say it that way, but she knows because I've told her. So anyway, it's like, just what do you need to, how can I help you as someone who loves you? What can I do to keep that in mind without taking full responsibility for it?
That actually, this leads me to my next question, which was, what if it's not an intimate relationship, but somebody you care about and somebody you interact with a decent amount? Like, what if you don't have that level of curiosity, but you also don't want to trigger them? It's more of like an acquaintance kind of, like I have several people in mind that like, I wouldn't want to be rude, but like, I'm not all up in their private space. You know what I mean? I wouldn't ever want to hurt them intentionally. And if they said to me, you're triggering me, like, would I be like, well, what can I do to not do that? Do you exert that energy acquaintances? Help me.
I mean, listen, I am, this might be a different episode, but I am increasingly getting to a place in my life.
Yeah.
Where if I don't have curiosity about you, I just don't want that relationship at all.
Interesting.
Like, truly,
I think it's a lot of default relationships. Like, our kids are friends, so we are together sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, even if I wouldn't choose to be around you, we are together.
Yeah, I just think that if it's that separate, like truly you triggering them is something that is 100% theirs. Again, if you're not trying to create harm.
Totally.
That's just, that to me is, you can't take any responsibility. Yeah. Again, unless you're being an asshole. You can't take any responsibility for them getting triggered. And also you're not in their inner world and you're saying you're not curious about their inner world. So it's like the level of energy exchange has to be really low. I think there's always, for me, there's always compassion and there's always non-judgment towards everyone.
Yeah, be kind.
But if I'm not curious about you, then I'm not trying to assist you in not getting triggered either.
Let's do that episode. I bet that would inspire a lot of people because I do think a lot of people waste their energy on bullshit relationships.
Totally. Yeah, I have zero interest in that. Zero.
Ouch. Woof. And I want to hear more about you being triggered. I feel like you have concrete examples. Oh. I do have one concrete example, actually.
Okay.
Would you like it?
Yeah.
I am very, very triggered, and it's a real problem for me, truly triggered by lateness. I grew up, I love my father dearly, but everyone who knows him knows he is chronically late. Like we would miss flights. We would get to places as they were closing. Yeah. We were rushing a lot, which I did just read, creates a lot of anxiety in a child when they are rushed a lot as a child.
Yeah.
So now I have a chronic problem. Like I've gotten a little more lax as I've had kids and it's harder to get out of the house and stuff, but like I get severe, severe physical discomfort when I'm late.
Yeah.
Even if I'm only going to be like 15 minutes late, I almost feel like I can't breathe. And the airport is like, my husband, Corey, is like, he can't. Because I like to arrive like 8 hours early because I have physically run through with luggage to get to my gate that we have missed before. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I can't, like that feeling is so unsettling. And I know
it's unsafe.
It's unsafe. And I know where it comes from. And I, again, love my dad. He's great. But it really developed a tremendous issue. Like I would be the last one picked up sometimes. And like it developed a major issue for me. I'm always like first in line to pick up my kids and because of it. So I have this awareness of where it came from. I know exactly what I needed in that moment, in that time of my life. But it hasn't shifted my need to still be early / on time as an adult. And my discomfort, like with cutting it close. Even my husband, who's Corey, who's never late. He's typically very on time. We actually often have disagreements because he'll like wait till the last minute, but he isn't late. But I just like to be so in the car ahead of time. Yeah. Yeah. That I don't know how to remedy that. Like even with the awareness. Any tips?
Yeah.
Any tips, coach?
Oh, are you asking? Or is this has it's turned into a
it was a share. It was a share and a coaching.
It was a share and maybe some tips.
And maybe some tips, because I think that that like could this mentality could be applied. Like a lot of people are unaware of their triggers, but I think a lot of people also know where their triggers came from. Like especially if it's trauma, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to tell you the same thing I said about the other part, which is like, you have to pause and take a deep breath and acknowledge that little kid who's running through the airport
in the moment.
And just let her know in that moment, take a deep breath and be like, you're okay. You're safe.
Yeah,
we
I never
are
do
safe.
That. That's I'm like, hurry up, everyone. I make it worse.
You know what you're doing? You're letting her run the show. When you're screaming, hurry up, everyone, that is her, which means she's not getting the acknowledgement and healing. She's still having to be vigilant and do her job. And she's just a little kid. So
even
when you can take a deep
breath.
Yeah. And like I said, somatically, you feel it in your body. Where do you feel it in your body right now?
Chest.
Great. So put your hands on your chest. Take a deep breath. Put some pressure on your chest, visualize that little girl, and just say, I've got you. You're okay.
Not only have I got you, I'm on time. Like I'm a very prompt individual.
Yeah,
so I really got you. Yeah, we are safe because I really make it a point to be time, be have respect for other people's time as well.
But even when it's out of your control and you're with other people and they're running late, just applying some pressure to your chest or wherever you're feeling the contraction in your body and just saying, I am right here. I have got you. Visualize that younger self and just let her know you're safe. It's not the same.
It's not the same. You're right.
No.
It's totally not.
That's
I love you, Dad. I love you. My dad listens all the time.
Love you, Bruce.
I love you, Dad.
Bruce, it's okay. We forgive you.
All right. I want
yours. I don't know. Guess mine. What would you say? I mean, you know me better than most people. What do you think are my bigger triggers?
Sharks.
You know.
Sharks. Abandonment. But I don't know how that like would show up in your daily life, like how you could interact with somebody and they could trigger you to feel abandonment issue.
I think it's my like FOMO. I think it's my wanting to be included.
Oh, you do? Interesting.
Yeah.
I think for a while, I don't feel this way anymore since you're in a very stable and healthy marriage, but a validation from like men, romantic partners.
Absolutely.
Which I attribute to your father not being around when you were younger.
Well, the trigger is like, there's not going to be security in the home, or there's not going to be, there's going to be heartbreak or romantic instability. Unless I just put up with whatever. I guess that's a limiting belief system.
Not a trigger? I don't want to misuse the word.
The limiting belief system was, I need a man around for there to be stability in the home.
Right, right.
The trigger then was, oh shoot, he's mad at me. Oh, I'm panicking that he's mad.
I see.
I'm triggered.
Oh, interesting. All right, can you just tell me one and stop making me guess and feel like I'm being quizzed on you?
My biggest trigger is money and poverty.
Oh, money, yeah.
Yeah. So like it's like if I I just did this somatic exercise with my coach where she had to say the thing I was most afraid of to see where my body felt it. And it was, she goes, what is it? And I said, say, there's not enough money to pay the bills. And literally as she said it, I felt nauseous. My heart was like closing in on itself. Like my whole system was like, SOS, I'm shutting down. That one sentence is my biggest trigger.
So what did you do out of curiosity? Same.
That work is about sitting with the feeling and really trying to understand what is the feeling and like, what do you really need? And letting the feeling just
be
witnessed. Like the idea of somatics and somatic healing is to get in touch with the feeling, witness the feeling. Because as you witness the feeling, it can begin to loosen and make room for other paradigms and other perceptions and possibilities to enter the picture.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I think these were
But we listen.
What?
And I think, like, listeners, just stop for a minute and ask, like, if we could talk to you and you were sitting here having coffee with us, we would be so curious. We'd be asking you the same question. Yeah, what do you notice creates the most visceral reaction in you? And who can you attribute that to? Which younger self in there is actually the one having the panic attack about it? And how do you stop and just, like, see them and witness and be there? And, like, I just showed Melissa, just, like, I got you. I'm right here.
Right.
You're okay. You're safe.
Yeah. And there are ways to alter your own behavior as an adult. Like, I have made it a point to be very on time my whole life.
Right.
To help, like, I don't know, like, lower. I feel like if I was late, it would exacerbate everything.
Oh, yeah. Your triggers drive you for sure. I think that's why I have been so driven in my career.
Yeah.
And why I have been in situations where I am the sole caregiver for my children. Not anymore. I'm remarried and I'm grateful to TJ for, like, all of the contributions.
Right.
But for a very long time, I was like, I am this running this household. We will never go without. And I will push myself in my career to make sure that happens. So I think our triggers are also motivators in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
All right, Bean. This wouldn't be an episode without your famous takeaways. So without further ado.
Truthfully, I think often my takeaways are relatively similar because a lot of it ties into the work that you do. You so often talk about bringing awareness to things, and I don't, but then every episode and every new thing we talk about, I don't think about awareness. I don't know how. And then you say it, I'm like, awareness. Every time, like, pay attention. I don't in that moment. My biggest takeaway was when you said in the moment, I was like, yeah, in the moment, that's when I'm the most frazzled. When Corey's like, not, you know, Corey's like, I have to go to the bathroom. I'm like, now, like, I don't think like he's still going to be out in time. He's never late. Yeah. I have the evidence. He's not late. Like, it's a, he operates that way. Talking about operating systems. I operate this way. Like, maybe I should just go wait in the car, take a deep breath, let myself know you're okay. Instead of pacing in the house, asking him when he's going to be done, like, take a pause, take a beat.
Yeah.
Don't get yourself overhyped because that's not fixing anything. So just paying attention, being mindful.
Beautiful. As always, guys, thank you for listening to Signal this week. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with someone that you care about. We so appreciate the support. And also, leave us a review anywhere that you can rate or review the podcast. We would so appreciate that too. And we will be back again next week with another episode. See you then. Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.